Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deest Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and on today's program, we are resuming our conversation with nurse practitioner Jade Williams about some of today's health and wellness trends. Before we pick back up, I have a couple of announcements to share. We will host Better Choices, Better Health. This is Iowa's Chronic Disease Self-Management Program. We'll be hosting that this fall, beginning Thursday, September 17th, running through October 22nd. This is a six-week workshop, and it will meet on Thursdays from 9:30 in the morning until 12 o'clock noon. Each session is led by two certified instructors. Designed to help participants gain confidence and take charge of their health, the program covers practical tools to manage ongoing health conditions while staying active. This includes communicating effectively with family, friends, and health professionals, techniques to address isolation, frustration, fatigue, and pain, tips for healthy eating and safe physical activity, and how to evaluate treatment options and create realistic action plans. Healthy snacks will be provided at each session. If you have questions or would like to register for the upcoming Better Choices, Better Health workshop, you can contact Ashley Bubeck. She is a nurse and health coach. You can call her at 515-832-7885 or email her at abubeck@vandeestmc.org. And lastly, I want to give a reminder, the 11th annual Van Deest Medical Center Foundation Golf Outing is coming up Friday, September 25th. It will be a four-person best shot at Briggswoods Golf Course. There are opportunities to get a team registered. There are also team sponsorships available, whole sponsorships. It will be a fantastic golf outing starting at 12 o'clock noon. All the information can be found on our website. Go to vandeestmc.org. Also, if you'd like to join us, if you're not a golfer, we have free entertainment provided by Day OK Jazz Project from 5 to 7. This is open to the public. It will be at Briggswoods Clubhouse, and we certainly hope you'll come out to join us again Friday, September 25th. All proceeds from the event will support patient care needs at the hospital. And with that, we are going to pick up where we left off from part one, Health Trends Under the Microscope. Nurse practitioner Jade Williams discussed sauna and the vibration plate. Next up for discussion, we're going to begin part two, talking about creatine.
This one is really the creatine monohydrate, but I wanted to take a minute and talk about creatinine, which is really what we talk about with your kidney function. And so sometimes there's just a lot going on in the news right now. And I know there's been several things that have come out in regards to if the creatine monohydrate, if it's going to cause issues with your kidney function. But really, to just know the creatine monohydrate is really that supplement that's going to be utilized to improve your muscle performance. And if we're talking about your kidneys, it's really the waste produced measured on your labs, and they're not the same thing. Okay. And so one of the biggest things to understand is that we can see an elevation in your creatinine on your labs, especially if you are a young, healthy adult athlete. And so there's various ways of defining what that truly means, but something to think about. And so if you have a lab value and it comes back and you've been taking the monohydrate, but you're concerned about your kidney function, you know, you'd need to just have a conversation with your doctor and then go through the proper channels and go from there. So really getting into the actual supplement, though, however, you know, we've been seeing it all over. It's being studied for brain health and muscle development and all of those great things. And so really the evidence suggests consuming anywhere from 3 to 5 grams a day. It appears to be currently safe in healthy adults. We've been hearing nothing but great things about it. And we want to be sure, however, that your kidney function is within normal range prior to starting the use of it. So if it is something you're interested in and you've never taken it before, I would definitely still encourage you to have a conversation with your primary provider and then make the determination from there. So it can slightly elevate your creatinine when you have your blood drawn, especially if you're just starting it. But, you know, it's tough to say if and how, but it doesn't mean that your kidney function has worsened. Okay, so clinical studies are consistently demonstrating that the specific increase is really just physiologically benign, and it does not indicate an actual decline in your kidney function. Or that it is showing an actual damage to your kidneys. But like I said, this is why it's great to have your primary provider involved before you start any type of supplement. Daily use of the creatine monohydrate is one of the most thoroughly researched and scientifically validated dietary supplements available today. And so extensive clinical data from leading medical institutions like Harvard and Mayo confirm that daily use provides substantial benefit for the athletic performance, muscle preservation, and cognitive function. So confirmed science-based benefits, and this I feel like is just taking off every day. There's new research coming out. But really, the biggest primary ones that I found most recently was the confirmed science-based benefit is rapid energy production. So it increases the stores in your muscles and it accelerates the reproduction of the cellular energy during short, intense bursts of activity. Also, it can increase the strength and muscle size, which is typically what we've thought about this supplement, you know, indefinitely, right? Mm-hmm. For the long haul. It's been utilized in weightlifters and bodybuilders.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
So this one, it's when paired with resistance training, it acts as an amplifier to build the muscle mass and does increase your fiber growth and allows for extra repetitions during hard sets. And then it can accelerate your muscle recovery. So this is also an additional benefit. Daily use reduces muscle cell damage and decreases your post-workout inflammation and helps minimize tightness and soreness. So if you are somebody who's new to weightlifting or resistance training and you're finding that you're struggling with your recovery, this might be something to consider as well. And then prevention of age-related muscle loss. So it does help older adults combat sarcopenia or muscle wasting and preserving physical independence and functional strength. And then, of course, the newest one on the block is discussing the cognitive and brain health. And so emerging research indicates that it does provide neuroprotective benefits, improves your memory, information processing speed, and mental fatigue, especially in sleep-deprived individuals or older adults. I'm not specifically discussing the dosing amount for these types of different things, but that would be another conversation as well to have with your provider. And then taking a daily supplement if you do not work out still does offer verified cognitive and cellular as well as metabolic benefit, though you're going to miss out on the primary muscle building effect. So while it's famous as a fitness supplement, it is fundamentally a cellular energy booster used by the brain and organs and not just your muscles. So verified non-exercise benefits is again that brain health and memory. So your brain requires a massive amount of energy to function. And so the clinical reviews from Mayo have shown that daily supplementation can improve short-term memory, reasoning, and mental fatigue, particularly in those older adults or during periods of sleep deprivation. Protection against muscle loss. So as you age, we naturally lose muscle mass, and the research has indicated that while it cannot build new muscle without resistance training, it can help slow down the rate of natural muscle wasting, especially even in individuals who are sedentary. And then metabolic and blood sugar support. So early research is being published by the University of Missouri suggesting that it plays a role in metabolic health by helping to regulate blood sugar levels and improve insulin sensitivity, which if it's maintaining your muscle, then that is probably should be happening as well, that it should help with your insulin resistance as well. And then high utility for vegetarians and vegans. I thought this was an interesting point because it's not something we typically tend to talk about when we're talking about this supplement. But if you are a vegetarian or vegan, this would be a great supplement for you because it's naturally found in red meat. So if you're consuming, you know, 6 ounces of red meat a day, you should be probably hitting, I think, around the 3 to 5 grams of the monohydrate that you're supplementing with. So if you are a vegan and you don't eat red meat and you don't eat seafood, because that's another place where we can find it, then this would be a good supplement to consider. Overall, every study says, hands down, take 5 grams a day. It's one scoop, essentially. Will you see some type of weight shift, primarily anywhere from 1 to 5 pounds, especially in women? But it's because it's saturating your muscles and it's not a true fat. You know, your weight's not going up because you're gaining fat. It's going up because you're saturated. And you know, as you continue to use it, your body will probably start to lose a little bit of that water weight and equal itself out. So, yeah. So, interesting. The fourth segment is castor oil packs, and this is also everywhere right now. So, these have exploded, especially on social media, and the claims include everything from detoxification, liver cleansing, hormone balancing, reducing inflammation, improving fertility, and breaking up scar tissue. Okay, so where did this originate? This was probably one of the most interesting ones. So primarily from a gentleman called Edgar Cayce in the early 1900s. And Edgar Cayce is not modern medicine. Unfortunately, he was identified most primarily as a 20th century American psychic. And he was also known as the sleeping prophet. So the use of flannel soaked in castor oil applied over the abdomen was heavily popularized by him. There's no lab testing, unfortunately. Cayce claimed to diagnose illnesses and prescribe remedies while in a trance state. And his recommendations were based on clairvoyance and not clinical trials. There was an ancient context to this as well. While the castor bean plant has been used for thousands of years in ancient Egypt and Greece, it was used primarily as fuel, an industrial lubricant, or as an oral laxative, not as a topical detox wrap. And so, you know, I could see if it's being identified as a lubricant, how it would probably assist in promotion of a bowel movement, right? But unfortunately, not modern medical research. So what does the science show? Unfortunately, very little. And there's only a handful of small studies that have been done. No high quality randomized trials, which is really what we, you know, look for at minimum. And unfortunately, none of them are supporting liver detoxification, hormone regulation, gallbladder cleansing, weight loss, or immune enhancement. So any benefit our claim is really going to be what we would say is anecdotal evidence. And so while it may be working for that person or that specific population of people, it doesn't unfortunately have any science to back it. And what the science actually shows, so the FDA has a clear stance on castor oil, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has only approved castor oil as an oral stimulant laxative to treat acute constipation, and it is not approved for any topical therapeutic use. The detox myth: the body relies on your liver, kidneys, and gastrointestinal tract to process and filter toxins. So there's absolutely no psychological mechanism by which an oil placed on top of the skin can cross the lipid barrier, enter the bloodstream, and cleanse internal organs or balance hormones. This is just what is out there. Is it safe? Yes, if you're using it externally. By no means am I recommending that you utilize this as your own home remedy for a laxative or easement of constipation management. Essential safety warnings. So thinking about If you're pregnant, avoiding completely castor oil can contain a certain acid, which would interact with the prostanoid receptors, which unfortunately can trigger uterine contractions, potentially inducing early labor. And so it's an acid that could be in the castor oil itself, or it might also have to do with maybe how it ferments in the bottle, or if the light gets to it. And so those would all be things that you need to be very cautious about. Skin reactions. Patients have experienced, unfortunately, contact dermatitis and allergic reactions due to the side effects of the topical castor oil. So always be sure to perform a patch test first, and then never ingest freely. Swallowing the castor oil can cause severe abdominal cramping, explosive diarrhea, vomiting, and acute dehydration, which I don't think anybody wants to have to deal with, right?
That,
yes,
right.
Yes. So unfortunately, this is going to get one rating. Bottom line, there's low evidence and just low quality evidence. And so I, you know, enter at your own risk. So number five is cold plunges, which is a huge hot topic as well. I think it's different for men and women. I will start off with that, and just always know that primarily research is always done in men. So take that as you will as well. But the cold plunges have become incredibly popular. The claims include things like reducing inflammation, weight loss, mental health, improved immunity, and of course, longevity. Thinking also there's a benefit for mental health. And this is actually where the evidence is the strongest. So cold exposure activates your norepinephrine, your dopamine, endorphins, and then many people report improved mood, greater alertness, reduced stress. The biggest caveat is that the studies remain small, but it's reproducible. And so that's always what's important. If you can reproduce it in, you know, multiple smaller studies or multiple populations, and you still get the same, that's what we look for in science. So cold immersion reduces soreness after intense exercise, and especially endurance sports, which, you know, if you think back, even any type of athletic, you know, a cold bath or an ice bath. Yeah. I mean, it's something that we've been promoting and doing for, you know, years. Ever.
Yes. Yeah.
But so you just have to think about, if your goal is muscle growth, which, you know, we seem to really be interested in at this junction, regular cold plunges immediately after lifting can reduce your hypertrophy because it blunts that inflammation. And so that's where there is some discrepancy, and you have to kind of figure out how would it best align with your goals and your current program and your fitness and what your outcomes and desires are for that. Weight loss. So cold exposure will slightly increase your caloric burn, and then it's nowhere near enough to replace the diet and exercise, but it obviously can be used as an adjunct. And then immune function. Some studies suggest fewer sick days, and evidence on that remains mixed. So I think it just depends on which study you read. And then risks. Well, people with coronary artery disease, you know, so if you see a cardiologist, this would definitely be something to have a conversation with your primary care or your specialist. Arrhythmias, another thing to be cognizant about. Uncontrolled hypertension, another one to think about. And Raynaud's disease, or some form of neuropathy. You know, so if you tend to get the discoloration in your hands or feet, or you have numbness and tingling, those would be good reasons to have another conversation with your provider before, you know, jumping in, so to speak. And then we know, like I said, the benefit is primarily most seen in mental health, but thinking about, you know, what will that mean? So studies have identified that it provides those sharp spikes in the dopamine and the norepinephrine, and then it'll provide an immediate mood boost as well as focus. Some claim upwards of 2 hours, so it kind of just depends. And you know, probably depends on how long your session is, what the temperature of water is, which are all variable. And then, of course, muscle recovery. So that's highly accurate as well. Excellent for reducing soreness, but actively hurts your muscle hypertrophy if you're doing it directly after lifting. Weight loss, overstated, you know, that shivering activations your brown fat and burns minor calories, but will not trigger noticeable weight loss alone. However, the takeaway there is that it's affecting the brown fat, which is really what we want to lose anyway. It's not necessarily so much about being lean. It's about how do you reduce the fat that sits around our organs. And so this is a great tool for that. Immune function, mixed and weak. So just really kind of thinking about, there needs to be more robust evidence, clinical investigation into this. And then longevity, it's not really proven yet, but early data showing cellular stress responses like autophagy, but you have to remember that's kind of a buzzword. And really, it's just, you know, getting rid of the old cells in the body. Well, how can you do that? Multiple different ways. There's conversations about fasting, weightlifting, cold plunges, using a sauna. So, I mean, there's multiple modalities. So you don't have to just use the cold plunge to achieve that. And then cold plunges, you know, realistically, the breakdown. So they reduce that acute muscle soreness or DOMS, which is great, and lowers your perceived fatigue by restricting your blood vessels and blunting the inflammation. So why can it not replace exercise? The cold water immersion blunts the muscle protein synthesis, which relies immediately after strength training, actually hinders the long-term gains in the muscle hypertrophy and strength. And then, of course, the baseline, they are purely a passive symptom management tool, not a builder of cardiovascular or muscle fitness. The other takeaway with this that I didn't really delve into is that, like I said, for men and women, this is going to be different. So for females, the water does not have to be anywhere near as cold as studies have shown for men to produce these outcomes. We can tend to actually enjoy the water to be quite a bit warmer and still provide the same benefit. I can't necessarily pinpoint right now how many studies I read on it, but they have shown that females specifically can have realistically a good outcome, maybe not as much as what you would see with a cold plunge, if you just put your face into cold water in the shower. So if you turn down the water in your shower and increase your tolerance of that, starting somewhere around 30 seconds, upwards of 2 minutes, but you let the cold water just, you know, saturate your face. Mm-hmm. It will also provide some of these benefits. Primarily, it's usually mood. It's going to boost the mood. Definitely want to think about talking with your doctor before you jump into something specifically like this, because if you have an underlying condition, then we're not really doing ourselves any good. And the goal is ultimately to provide a good outcome and not,
exactly,
something that could be detrimental instead. And then the red light therapy. So this is number 6. So the claim is on social media, it says red light therapy can reverse aging, build collagen, reduce wrinkles, speed muscle recovery, improve joint pain, increase testosterone, grow hair, boost metabolism, and heal almost anything.
Okay. This is,
I know, I think it's a holy grail.
Life changing. Yes.
Yes. So what's actually supported by the science? And what is it? So really, red light therapy is primarily identified as like 3 different names outside of the red light therapy. Okay. So photobiomodulation, low level laser therapy, or LLLT, and low level light therapy. Okay, so it uses red and near-infrared wavelengths. It's typically between 630 to 850. So that's like the biggest thing. So if you're shopping for one of these, you want to be sure that it's meeting within this wavelength requirement, or it's not really worth your money. So 630 to 850 nanometers to penetrate the tissue. So unlike tanning beds or UV light, red light does not damage your DNA or cause a sunburn. And I think this is sometimes one of the misnomers. Well, what, you know, if I can get outside, I'm getting vitamin D, I'm doing all these things. So what is the benefit? Well, the red light itself does not damage the DNA or cause a sunburn. Researchers believe it works by stimulating the mitochondria, which is the powerhouse of the cell, mm-hmm. and it reduces oxidative stress and influences inflammatory pathways. And so really, the mitochondria, like I said, powerhouse. So whatever we can do to really help that along and to help it to dampen the oxidative stress or get rid of it or whatever we need to do will in turn help or should, in theory, slow the process of aging within our systems. So that's why you should get all these benefits, right? Reversing the signs of aging and speeding your muscle recovery, all those great things. So where the evidence is the strongest is actually seen with pain relief. And this is one of the best supported uses for the use of red light. Moderate quality evidence suggests red light therapy can reduce pain associated with osteoarthritis, tendinopathies, neck pain, some chronic musculoskeletal conditions as well. And the improvements are generally modest, but clinically meaningful for many people. So I will also disclose I own a red light. So personally speaking, I, as some of you know, I've struggled with this chronic left-sided pain since before my diagnosis, and the red light definitely helps me with that. And my light, I just put it on there and it times out. I mean, it turns itself off and then you can't resume the light for 2 or 3 minutes. It has like a cool down, mm-hmm. but mine's just like a little guy and you can move it and use it wherever.
Different spots on your body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you just can only do one session and then you have to allow it to cool down.
Okay.
It's not going to burn you when you touch it though, but it just needs to power down. Mm-hmm. But I've also used it on my stomach where I have like my postoperative scars. And then also just, I have adhesions, I'm presuming, you know, just different things like that. And I feel like that's also helped as well. And I got it because I wanted to see if it would provide any benefit for the wrinkles on my face. And since I've been using it, I mean, we just went to the airport on Friday and the person did not believe that I was 40. So I don't know if he was trying to flatter me or not, but I will say maybe it's the red light therapy.
Well, it
I
could be. Know. You don't have any wrinkles oh, on thanks. Your face.
Yeah, and I'm very, nothing against neuromodulators or anything like that. I just have really tried super hard since after having treatment to see what I can do, you know, mm-hmm. without the use of those. And so, yeah, it's just all natural red light therapy. I don't know, you know, maybe it's that in my cheap face cream and no face wash. I don't
know. It's making a believer out of me.
But Ryan has used the red light on his Achilles too. So he's been recovering from that since February. And he'll do a couple sessions. He just puts the light like right underneath of it. Yeah. And he says it helps as well. So just so you know, that's our anecdotal evidence. It's our own personal opinion, not trying to get anybody to go out and purchase a red light or anything like that. But it is something that, we believe in, I guess, you know, and especially from a medical standpoint. So, and I do think, it definitely probably could have some significant benefits for that osteoarthritis or different types of pain and things like that. As far as the skin health, so this is another area actually where there's fairly strong evidence to support this. Multiple randomized controlled trials show improvement in fine wrinkles, skin texture, collagen production, mild acne, and wound healing. And the effects are gradual and require consistent treatment over weeks to months. And so I think sometimes that could be the piece there where it can be a struggle is because with all of it, everything is about consistency. Mm-hmm. So you can't expect to have a great outcome within the first, you know, just 3 sessions or right. anything like that. But you just got to be doing it repetitively over and over and then, you know, see for yourself if you identify a benefit or not. And then muscular recovery. So some studies suggest that the red light therapy may also reduce delayed onset muscle soreness or that DOMS, improve recovery after intense exercise, and slightly improve muscle performance in some athletes. So the evidence for this is promising, but not yet definitive because studies vary widely in the treatment protocol. So just something to consider. For hair loss, however, so for androgenetic male and female pattern hair loss, there's a moderate evidence that FDA has cleared a red light device and can increase hair density over several months. Mm-hmm. So however, results are typically less dramatic than what is shown in the advertisements, and it does appear to work best when combined with established treatments such as topicals or whatever they see fit, but something to think about. So as in always, it's not a one and done. It's mm-hmm. probably an adjunct to a treatment, but something to think about or consider. You know, the red light or any of these modalities are not the end all be all, but it's more of a combination. How and what would work with your lifestyle and what really meets your goals, and how can you use it as a supplement, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially. So overall, these health trends in general, just like fashion, they come and go. And realistically, when it comes to our health, the evidence is really what matters. So before spending money on the latest wellness product, you should really ask yourself these three questions. Has it been studied? Has it been compared to standard care? And are the benefits meaningful, not just statistically significant? Sometimes the oldest advice still wins. So exercise regularly, being sure to eat a balanced diet, sleeping well, and managing your stress, as well as building strong relationships. And so those interventions continue to outperform almost every wellness trend on the market.
Jade, thank you so much. This was such a fun program to do because at different times there are those trends out there. And before making this immediate reaction, I think it's really good to find out the facts. And so we appreciate you doing a deeper dive into these six health products or trends that claim to improve health and well-being. So I really appreciate you doing the show today. I do want to mention Jade is available. She sees patients at Vandy's Family Health Clinic here in Webster City. You can call to schedule an appointment, 515-832-7800. She also directs and leads our skilled care program here at the hospital. Jade, as always, thanks for being on the program.
Yeah, thank you.
That will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deest Medical Center, where our focus is you.